Hello, everyone, and welcome to What's the Film Podcast, Let's Talk. My name is Scott.
And I'm Steve.
And the topic of Let's Talk on this episode is a little film called
Leave the World Behind,
indeed. Before we dive into that and leave all of our worries behind us, Stephen, and discuss this film, where can people find all of our other content?
On all major podcast providers.
They can, and you can find us on social media by searching for What's the Film Pod on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Should I call it X?
Just call it Twitter.
Okay. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter by searching for What's the Film Pod, or you can go to whatsthefilmpod.com.
Would you call it the social media formerly known as Twitter?
No, because I feel that's horrendous mouthful, isn't it?
But I'll just call it X. No, we'll call it Twitter.
See, I don't actually think anyone calls it X.
Nobody calls it X.
You know what I mean?
Like, no. It's Twitter, isn't it? It's always going to be Twitter.
It's Twitter.
Elon Musk, you can keep calling it X.
In my heart, it'll
always
be Twitter.
Don't you think the logo looks real sleazy? It looks just like real... I just think it looks rubbish.
The little blue bird.
I miss the little blue bird.
Do you feel that was the point? Do you think it was like, I'm going to take over Twitter and I'm going to do everything in my power to just change it? You know, I feel
but
that
he
just because
changed
you can't
the format of it or anything, really.
Well, no.
He's only changed that.
Bits of it's changed, haven't they? You can say what you want on it.
Would you buy McDonald's and just change the logo and just keep the restaurants the same? Maybe make it green with a Starbucks logo.
Yeah.
Starbucks buy it and just put a green M on a white background
and write your name on the burger boxes.
Something like that.
But no, I feel Twitter has not changed in what it is, but like. It's like a cesspit now, really, isn't it? Like, really, don't go on Twitter to find us. Go on Instagram.
Okay. Okay. So
don't look on Twitter.
Okay. So welcome to Watch the Film Podcast. Where can people find us, Scott?
On all major podcasts.
And you can also find us on
various social networks. Moving swiftly on. Sorry, I derailed it anyway.
Yeah.
Leave the world behind.
Leave the world behind. Leave Twitter behind.
Leave Twitter behind.
Leave
there
the
you go. There was a segue.
Yeah.
Leave the World Behind, a little film that came out quite close to the end of 2023. Is that?
Yeah. I think it came out. Yeah, it did.
It was.
It came out. Was it about December time?
I believe so.
October. 25th of October.
October, really?
There we go. 25th
okay,
of October.
Enough. Not as late as we thought then.
What's really good about this is I actually beat you.
You did. I'm wrong way. I'm not a left-handed phone operator. I'm slightly out of position here.
All the excuses coming out now.
Okay. In fact, I am really. But we'll be all right. Yeah. So Leave the World Behind. The reason we brought that one to the table for this episode of Let's Talk is because this made an 11-hour appearance on your list of 2023, didn't it?
It certainly did, yeah. It popped up there. Like I do every year.
I tried to be really subtle there. Did you hear me, like, moving all the furniture?
Did you move the furniture there? I couldn't hear that at all.
Sorry, listeners.
Recording a podcast, and I couldn't hear you moving things around, yeah.
Right, I'm more comfortable now.
Are you okay? Are you happy?
I am, I'm fine. Right, okay. So this was on Netflix, and it made your top five of the year, didn't it?
Like I do every year, I tend to watch a film on the last day of the year, and I'm like, oh, wow, this is it. It's got to go on the list.
The Outsider on a horse race, something like that.
Look what's come racing along here. Yeah, bit like... I always think of it that time that Ben went to see Suicide Squad and thought it was the best film he'd ever seen. And then he went to see, what was the other one he saw?
Justice League.
And he thought that was the best film we'd ever seen. And it's like me, he's like, oh, wow, it's last day of the year. Yeah. Oh, let me put this film on,
Ben being Stephen's eldest son.
Yeah,
being my
eldest son, yeah.
Ben will appear on the podcast a bit more this year as well.
We've promised him, haven't we? We'll bring him on. He can get involved a bit more.
So if you're listening, Ben...
Yeah, if you're listening,
coming on it soon.
Yeah, we'll get you on the Back to the Future one here.
When that eventually happens.
This episode of Let's Talk, we're going to discuss Leave the World Behind, aren't we?
Mm-hmm.
I think the way
I want to discuss it anyway is because so spoilers for the 2023 roundup episode.
I'll tell you what, I'll just give you a rundown of what it is if you want.
Well, you can in a second, but just from the point of view is that, so like I said, Stephen was quite strong on this and said about watching it. I watched it, didn't share as much of a higher opinion, if you like, as Stephen. So I feel we can discuss it and have a mini review of it, if you like, but I would like you, from my point of view, to kind of like dive into what it was about it that you really enjoyed. Because, everyone's entitled to different opinions, aren't they? So I really want to see it from your point of view. It is really why I suggested it. So So yeah, briefly, give us a rundown of what's in it, who's in it, who's it written and directed by, and all that malarkey.
You're testing me now, aren't you?
Well, I can tell you. I've got it open here.
So it's distributed by Netflix.
Yeah, it's available on all Netflix providers.
It was produced by Julia Roberts. Yeah. That's a bit of a given, written since she's in it.
Written and co-directed by Sam Esmail. Is he familiar?
Yeah, Sam Esmail. He's the guy who was the creator of Mr. Robot.
Oh, okay.
And I'll be honest with you, I've never watched that.
I've watched a couple of episodes in the background, so I feel it's something that I maybe would revisit. 8.5 average rating on IMDb there. That's quite high, isn't it? No, for Mr. Robot.
For Mr. Robot, yeah.
That's quite high. Yeah.
This film gets... what does this film get?
This film receives...
Oh, right. So in terms of ratings, it gets 6.5 out of 10 on IMDb and 76% on Rotten Tomatoes.
I mean, that's fair. That's quite good, I suppose. Yeah.
I'm always like... That's not very good, is it? But then...
Yeah, you're like, 99%. It's not
99%. What's going on? You know, what is 99%? But yeah.
But go on, give us a rundown of what the film's about.
Little rundown of what this film is. Family of four. Julia Roberts is the mother. Ethan Hawke's in this. He's the dad. Two teenage children on a family getaway to a luxurious rental home. Mm-hmm. So they decide last minute to just get away, up sticks and just move away just for the weekend. And this trip that they go to the beach takes a bit of an ominous turn when some form of cyber attack knocks out all devices, and there's a ship that just seems to come across to the shore.
Yeah,
and it's just all really, really bizarre. It's a series of events.
Navigational equipment or something, aren't it? Like you said, linked to cyber stuff.
Yeah, and it just everything seems to happen real bizarre. As this happens, I'm trying to do this without a lot of spoilers.
I'll be honest with you, Stephen. I feel we can go full spoilers. I mean, it's,
right, okay. We're going full spoilers.
Full spoilers on this one. Yeah, it's a discussion it's been out for a bit.
While they're at this house, two strangers appear at the door. Mm-hmm. Which would be Mashala Ali.
Yep.
And I think it's let's see if I can pronounce her name right. Mahila Herold, who plays his young daughter. But this couple appear at the house, saying it's their house, and we're at a point there. Like, well, what, you know, it kind of goes from there.
They're claiming it's their house that they rent out.
That's right. Yes.
Yeah. It's an Airbnb type.
An Airbnb. Yes. That's right. Yeah. So it has that mysterious and that mysterious sort of vibe to it. It's this sort of thriller of
sinister undertone.
You can't quite work out what it is that's going on. You think there's something a little bit dodgy about these people, a little bit, you know, they're holding something back or they know something. But the full film's like that, really. So that's kind of a rundown of the film, really.
And I think it's worth pointing out that it essentially escalates, doesn't it? So there's one thing after the other, another kind of thing.
Yeah. Series of strange events, really. Yeah.
It's building up, isn't it? To like various things like animals converging in the garden, like wild animals are appearing at them.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
Things aren't right, are they? Yeah. And stuff. So, what was you going to say? I was going to ask you.
So, yeah, what was your thoughts on the film then? What did you think to it?
I mean,
you didn't like it as much as I did. I don't think you got as much from it as what I did. But what was your thoughts?
I felt it was quite sinister. Yeah. As you say, there was a sinister undertone. And like you described it, or when you initially mentioned it in the review thing, in the review episode, you'd mentioned about it being akin to Knock at the Cabin.
Yes.
From M. Night Shyamalan and did more with it, with the idea, if you like, than that did. I'll probably agree with you. I can't remember if I did, but I think I put that in the when we were talking about it, I mentioned about. I would agree with you on that. I felt it was more of a film than Knock at the Cabin was.
Yeah.
Like with more of a through-line story. I felt Knock at the Cabin was just like...
I think you just didn't deliver Knock at the Cabin.
No, I would agree with that. Yeah. On what maybe we wanted going into it, perhaps, and from that point of view. I just felt I was a little bit dissatisfied with the ending of Leave the World Behind. But I kind of do accept that I don't feel that the ending was the point, if that kind of makes sense. I feel the film was about us looking at society and looking at how we would react in situations like that. Now, you very, you know, top surface level went on about the themes of the film there, or the events that happened. I think one of the big reasons was, or one of the big, not necessarily reasons, but one of the big through lines was that Julie Roberts' character was very judgmental of the people who arrived at the house, weren't they? And obviously, see, this is the thing that I did text you, though. I was a bit like, regardless of race, creed, or colour, or anything like that, I feel you would have not let, you would be wary of someone at your door. Yeah, that was the only thing that I thought about that. But I understood what they were saying. It was people of colour being looked at because of that, looked at differently and things like that, and not trusted by...
So the young daughter said that, so what they did was they let the family turned up, and they had a big discussion, do we let them in, don't we let them in, and eventually they let them in. They had no proof that it was their house. They've already had this strange event earlier in the day, but these two people have come into the house knowing that, you know, they obviously know something else is going on. They let them in. They've got the family there with the two kids, and the Julie Roberts and Ethan Hawke have got their two kids there. They let this charismatic, because I thought he was quite charismatic. I do think he gives a great performance, Michelle Riley, and in this he was very charismatic in it, and he lets his, you know, gets his way into his house, and he knows where things are. But you see the shot where he goes in the drawer, and there's a gun there, and you're like, oh.
But he also didn't get it, did he?
But he didn't pick the gun up. So, and like, in a way, is that a little, you know, but then later on the gun's not there. So,
And like, sorry to jump in, but on that, I will just add to that. I thought that was a really clever little mechanism that they did, because like, you've literally just did what they wanted us to do, I guess, didn't you? Where you think like, oh, he's going to get the gun, when really.
But he didn't.
I would imagine most households in America have got, but the obviously their world is very different to ours, so I reckon that's quite a common thing that you'll have guns in drawers or whatever you are, in lockups. So the fact that we all was like instantly like, oh, he's gonna get that kind of was like a parody what they were doing, wasn't it, if you like.
There was so much in this film for me, right, because there's little things like that. So you've seen, how many films have you seen where home invasion, somebody comes into the house like that, and
you're thinking the Purge, aren't you? Something like that straight away.
Yeah, that sort of thing. And you're naturally thinking it's going to go this way, and it didn't. And that, I think that was the whole film didn't go in the direction I thought it was going to go. It kept me guessing all the way along. It didn't. The family were just a normal family. Mm. The kids were just a little bit weird, you know. There was so much with the oldest son, his teeth kept coming out, and
that was
pretty horrific. But it's like, well, what caused that?
Yeah,
you know, you didn't really find out, but they were saying it was probably the sonic wave or maybe, something. Sound.
But you didn't even find, see, that in a way is maybe what just held me back from thinking, like, oh, what a resolution that was, because I didn't think you found out a lot of. Like, I understand.
Well, it's like the ship as well. The ship just came in. You didn't find out anything more of that. Everyone
was there
just
anybody on the ship?
Beach. Like, there was no one on the deck. Yeah, would there not have been people on the deck? Mm. It was all sort of, I think it sort of dangled carrots there to sort of lead you in a direction to get you to go there. But it didn't give you the answers.
No, it was almost like an Armageddon type idea, wasn't it? Like,
I'll be honest with you, that's what I really liked about it. I liked the fact that what was this thing in the sky you saw coming along? And it was a drone. It was dropping all these leaflets. And because at first I was like, oh, wow, what's this? Mm. For me, and I think I said this to you at the time, it was very, like, Jordan-esque. Jordan Peele. It was very, very similar to his sort of film that he would go with. It was also very similar to... something like, Tales of the Unexpected or the Outer Limits or something. It was something
like a Black Mirror type thing.
Yeah, like Black Mirror. I'm trying to think of like a modern day equivalent. Yeah. But that's perfect. That Black Mirror, something like that. That Black Mirror is a really good example where that it's like so, like, sort of melt your mind a little bit. Get you thinking and get you guessing. But that sort of thing, Twilight Zone. That was the comparison I was looking for. Like a Twilight Zone, that it led you in this direction, but again, similar to, I'll give you another one here, like Lost, where it didn't give you answers to things, you know, it just put little subplots there,
but didn't
give you any answers on that. Now, normally with certain films, I kind of don't like that, it puts me off. But for whatever reason on this one, I did like it, and I did like what it did. I love the fact that you know the animals. You never really found out why the animals did that.
No.
But in terms of something happening to our environment, something happening to the world like that, animals would react to it, and there was a lot of that. And it, at the end there, where towards the end, where the young girl is stood there with Julia Roberts in the as the mum, well, not the mum, but the two characters are there, stood in the woods next to the shed, and all the deers are there, and they actually look like they're going to attack. They didn't attack, but these are now animals that were quite passive and quite, you know.
Well, yeah, you only have to crunch a stick and it darts.
But they weren't now, and
tame, and they're
almost like a predator.
Yeah.
And they changed. I mean, I don't think they would have attacked them. They didn't, but they weren't scared.
It was almost as if nature was adjusting, sort of, wasn't it?
Yeah. That's what I liked about it. I liked that it gave you that sort of wow. This, you know, in this world, this could happen. Mm.
I
don't think anything like that would happen as quickly. I think you would see that over a space of maybe a week or two. I don't think you see it overnight in that sense, which is this film was sort of compressed like that. But in terms of what you're trying to give as a story, you couldn't do this over a week. They won't stay the week in that house for a week. I can see why they did what they did
I think I maybe my gut reaction to it was that one of disappointment, because I maybe was looking more through the lens of, I want to know why. I want to know why this is happening. But, you know, having discussing it here, and to be honest, not just because we're doing this, on reflection a little bit, I have appreciated it a little bit more for it was a commentary, wasn't it? On people as well. Because
it was a commentary on people and a commentary on society.
Because there was so many, because it, you know, had humorous elements in it as well for such a horrific set of events, really. Yeah. So you had Julia Roberts' character, who was very, she was almost burying her head in the sand a little bit for things. Well, I mean, they all were, really, weren't they, I suppose. Yeah. But she was, it was all the superficial things were there that were still important and, like pushing through. But I loved how, she was very trying to be maybe too switched on to everything. Whereas Ethan Hawke, as the dad,
he was so chilled out.
He was just so chilled in this time of crisis. And that, to me, that's a satire on what's elements of society would be like. There would still be elements of society kicking, planes are falling from the sky, and there'd be people kicking off because they can't get a Wi-Fi signal to watch their Netflix, which was the girl was trying to get the DVD,
she was so upset that she couldn't see the final episode
of Friends. But the one that really tickled me was when, you say about his teeth were coming out, and literally graphic scene, really, where he's just single-handedly pulling tooth after tooth after tooth out.
Yeah.
And then Ethan Hawke came in, didn't he? And oh my God. Oh, and he put his arm on him like, you're okay. You're going to be okay. Yeah. And I'm thinking, he clearly isn't. Yeah. He's pulling all his teeth out. And that is, again, society just immediately dismissing something, isn't it? Yeah. That happens a lot, doesn't it? And I feel there was a lot of that in it. That was a big commentary on people, I think.
Yeah. Another one that cropped up for me, which was Myala Harold, when she said, I'm sure the dad just wants to sleep with me, or something like that.
Yeah.
He obviously didn't, but she'd sort of befriended him, or just they got chatting like that. And,
well, that was almost...
And they'd had a drink, and you kind of thought, is it going this way? Mm. Is he going to make a pass at her? You also thought the same of Julia Roberts, where she got close and quite a little bit intimate
they kissed,
with him.
Didn't they? And then did they kiss?
I don't think they did. I think they hugged, didn't they, when he was dancing?
Yeah, that was right, they hugged, dancing, and then they... And then didn't one of them start crying?
Yeah, she pulled away, didn't she? And
I thought that was kind of thing. Yeah.
Ooh, you know, over time maybe something would develop there, but they're married, and you know, so she's looking for that comfort in a stranger that she's not getting from her husband. Honestly, Scott, I thought there was so much in there.
There was lots of layers to it. Yeah.
When you said about Friends a few moments ago, I'll sort of finish on this for me. Really, what I really enjoyed about it was the actual ending, the Friends music going off, because she finally seen that, you know, in the wake of an atomic bomb going off, and all this girl wanted to do was watch the ending of Friends that she'd never seen. She'd seen every episode of Friends, but apart from that last episode. And all she was bothered about was watching it.
Was if Rachel got on the plane.
Yeah, did Rachel get on the plane or not? But spoilers for Friends.
but we haven't told you if she did or she didn't.
Yeah, but now people know she might. She was.
Like, yeah, but she was a plane.
Rachel was on a plane.
Did that plane fall from the sky? Yeah. Like, yeah.
But no, what it was for me was that it was all. I think I said this as well at the time that she was looking for a time for a better time. It was like it was almost like a reality TV. It was kind of like. What I'm saying is that the young girl was so invested in this reality TV or this TV program from the 90s that's from a time gone by that she's never lived in, that she'll never ever know, she'll never ever see. I'll be honest with the 90s Friends era was never really like, society wasn't really ever like that, I don't feel. But this made up time of the 90s of Friends, and she was so, into the early 2000s. And she was so invested in that, in the wake of a nuclear explosion, that's all that mattered to her.
Mm.
And she was, you know, and it kind of is a bit like reality TV, that how we're just so engrossed in that. I think kind of what I'm saying there is like how society is nowadays and what we put our time in and what matters and we care about doesn't really, in the grand scheme of things, isn't really that important. Where you look at
Black Mirror. Vibe as well,
Black Mirror vibe, you know, yeah.
When
you look at something like how Dawn of the Dead, the 1970s Dawn of the Dead, was all about consumerism. That in this society, like you've seen the new version, the 2000s version, where it's the end of the world and all these people congregate in this mall and live this life in this mall, you know, because they've got everything they need, they've got all the comforts there, and it was a little bit like that.
Yeah, I would go with that.
I kind of. Pinpointed little elements of different things there that I got from this film that I just thought this is something extra that Knock at the Cabin didn't do, that other films that I've seen in the past haven't done, and I just really enjoyed it for that.
See, this Knock at the Cabin was also on a book, based on a book, wasn't it?
Yeah, and I didn't know that at the time.
Very different. I read the ending. I saw what the ending was in this review or this article, whatever, but very different to the film, apparently. That'd be interesting to maybe look at, maybe
It might be worth me reading
as
well.
Because enjoyed it. I
can't remember which way I did this. I think I read. I didn't. I think I watched The Road and then read it. Cormac McCarthy, who wrote the book, the novel, The Road.
Mm.
For me personally, it's the best book I've ever read. Mm. I've read it. I haven't read it for a few years now, so I'm going to say for at least maybe even 6 or 7 years now. But about 5 years. But it was a book that every 2 or 3 years I'd go back every 2 years I'd go back and read it again, and read it maybe twice in a year.
That'd be a good pick for an episode, The Road.
Yeah, it would. We'll maybe look at that another time. But again, in terms of how that film was, that was quite a. A bleak future with no hope, or in terms of there's nothing. And there's little elements. Certainly in the book, there's a lot more in the book than there is in the movie, which you usually find. But when people spoilers for The Road now. But when they find a store similar to the ending of this film, where they find a vault or like a bunker.
Oh, I'm going to ask you about that in a minute, though. So put a pin in the vault. Right, okay.
The road where they find the bunker, and wow, they found all this, but still, they're still, well, you can't stay here, we've got to move on.
Mm.
Whereas in this film, you would think they would
stay.
Well,
that's kind of my question, because I might have, excuse my ignorance, but what had happened to the neighbours? Because that was at the neighbour's house, wasn't it? The neighbours had a...
All you could think there is that the neighbours weren't there. Maybe they were on holiday somewhere.
Yeah,
they haven't actually got home and got there in time.
She'd gone down into the basement, hadn't she?
And I'll be honest with you, she's going into the basement and you're thinking, something's going to happen here.
Something was in there, but ultimately it wasn't. It was a safe haven, wasn't it? Stocked with food, and they had all the electronic equipment, and she found the DVD player, didn't
that's
she?
That's right,
took a
yeah,
as well.
Because
I was like, how rare is it? I mean, I can't remember the last time I saw a DVD menu. Like the Blu-ray menus were a bit different to the DVD.
And that's the thing as well, when she played it and it kicked in and you saw the menu and that, and it took me back to a time of a little bit of nostalgia as well. Like, oh, wow, this is cool. I was thinking this the other day because somebody put it on the Facebook group that I'm on, a film group, and somebody put on there about how much do you miss DVD menus. And I was thinking, yeah, I mean, like, do you remember like early 2000s where you used to have DVD commentary things, on like on a movie? And there's a few times I've watched an actual movie and listened to the DVD commentary. Mm. I mean, a perfect example of this is Dude, Where's My Car?
Yeah,
he's like a stupid, like moronic film, stoner based movie. Mm. You know, it is that sort of stupid film. I actually thought it was all right.
Have you watched that with the
commentary? I've watched it with the commentary on. The commentary of just listening to Sean William Scott and Ashton Kutcher with the director and just dissecting everything. And they're laughing at themselves.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Oh, do you remember when we did this? Or do you remember when we did... Oh, look, watch this scene. And they're just pulling it apart. And that made... That's an experience in itself, just watching that and listening to them. You just don't get that nowadays.
No.
Would you ever get someone doing a DVD commentary to a film, you know, Oppenheimer, you can't imagine.
This is the thing.
But do they do that?
I was going to say, they are on there. And I mean, I think you find, you get a lot of it through like this medium as well, where...
We usually get people who will sit and watch them and it's their reaction to a movie.
Well, you definitely get that. But I mean, like Sam, I'm 99% certain that they're on a lot of these things. You know, there are, because on Disney Plus, there's the option to watch some things with director's commentary.
But these must be older films. It can't be anything new or modern, really.
I wouldn't like to say either way, but I'm quietly confident that there is, because I feel A Quiet Place had one I read something about in the director's commentary of that. So, but I also think I agree with what you're saying, because I feel time has moved on. So you might get, like you say, a YouTube video of a director sitting down for half an hour talking about a movie.
Yeah.
You know, so you get it slightly different from that point of view, don't you? So yeah, I know what you mean.
But
I watched the nostalgia trip when that came on.
I was like, oh wow, I remember this. Yeah, I remember the DVD menus and things like that. Yeah, it was good. Yeah, like I say, Scott, there was a lot in this film for me.
Yeah.
There's even things I haven't really touched on. There was other elements of it, but you know, I could go on and talk.
I'll praise it as well for. I thought it was well acted.
Yes.
I didn't think there was anyone like phoning it in or anything like that. I thought everyone played the role very well. Like I said, and there was a strong cast in it. I mean, you're a big.
We didn't even mention Kevin Bacon there, did we?
Well, no, true. Yeah. I mean, it's a very small part, wasn't it? But yeah, again, Kevin Bacon was it. But you like Ethan Hawke as well, don't you?
I do. The summer of arms of actor. Yeah. He's quite. I don't know what the word is really, but he's.
Was Ethan Hawke in the Black Fern?
He was, yeah. He's done a few films recently. Like he was in Moon Knight, of course, as well, wasn't he? Really good in that. But he's one of those actors that's he's like your overall professional, really, isn't he? Mm. He takes it serious. I saw a clip of him on, I think it was a talk show. Well, it was a talk show. I think it might have been someone like Graham Norton. And he said about years ago when he was only early 20s or something like that, when he starred in Dead Poets Society with Robin Williams. And he said every day on set, Robin Williams would come in and just try and crack everybody up and try and make everyone laugh in typical Robin Williams fashion. He said, and he was trying to keep it serious. And now I'm a serious actor. I want to be a serious actor. And he said, the more he didn't laugh and the more he didn't get round to it, he said, he targeted him more. He said, look at this one, he won't laugh. He says, the director, look at this one, I can't get, you know, so this one, we've got a real dead one here or something like that. And he said he always got the, I think it was sort of like along the lines, he got the impression that he didn't really get on with him or didn't like him that much. And after that, Ethan Hawke had said on his talk show that somebody had rang him up like an agent, and he got him his first agent. I can't remember the details of how he said it, but he got him his first agent, and Robin Williams had rang this agent up and said, or got in touch with this agent and said, you need to star with this kid because he's going to be somebody famous one day. He's going to be a big name one day.
Yeah.
And Ethan Hawke said he's still my agent to this day. You know, pretty cool story.
He's
a bit of a virtuoso. He's that gives that sort of performance. I think he's a very similar actor to Anthony Hopkins, where you get Anthony Hopkins in a film, you're getting a good performance. Morgan Freeman, you know what performance you're getting. So
I thought it was good.
Yeah, I always feel like that when you watch an Ethan Hawke film. So not Mark Wahlberg, of course. No, he's not a Mark Wahlberg. He's not in that league.
We just won him round. Yeah. We just won him over from the second episode where we had a problem with Mark Wahlberg.
Say hi to your mother for me. No, I'm not a big Mark Wahlberg fan.
well, that was our little chat about Leave the World Behind.
I say this all the time. I'd urge anyone to go and watch it. Again,
I don't think it's for everyone.
Because I've heard mixed reviews on it. I've heard people say, well, it just ends, you know, it's this.
What, like
that.
My text?
I've seen people text like you just ends, yeah. You know. But I think when you look at it and you sort of strip it back and I'd like to go, now I know the film, I'd probably go watch it again. I'd probably get a bit more out of it this time.
I thought, just before we trail off from it, I thought the Rotten Tomatoes score was quite telling. You normally see a low, if you see a film that's like low, so I take like a Marvel film, for example, like quite often critically, they're now starting just to, it's the popular thing to not rate them very highly.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
The audience score goes up.
Yeah.
Whereas this has got, from 100 on Rotten Tomatoes, from 152 reviews, it's certified fresh with a 76% score. So the critics' consensus says, an exceptionally well-acted apocalyptic thriller, Leave the World Behind, steadily draws the viewer in despite its leisurely pace and somewhat simplistic messaging.
Mm.
The audience score from 5,000 ratings is only 34%.
Right, okay.
And I don't know what the name is, but it's got their upside-down bucket thing.
Right, okay.
And the audience summary says, after a pretty strong start, Leave the World Behind loses its way, fumbling an interesting premise with unlikable characters, unbelievable dialogue, and a disappointing ending. I'll be brutally honest. I mean, I feel the audience bit there is maybe a little bit harsh. I don't disagree with either of the message that they're saying though.
Yeah.
I think, there was elements of it where it was a bit, the dialogue was a little bit maybe unbelievable or whatever. And I think that was probably the point. I think was, like we said. But from the critics' thing there about it being well acted, the steady pace of the film, again, I feel the steady pace was designed to be that way. All these things were just ticking along in the background as you're just leisurely going through the film. So I thought that was really telling, that you normally get that the other way. When critics don't like something, the audience defends it.
Yeah, they defend it.
Whereas all the critics liked it. But I reckon there'll be a lot of it. And also,
of a mixed bag, this film.
Well, with it being on Netflix, I'm not being judgmental in the slightest, but Netflix is obviously a platform that's, what we're going to watch tonight, clicking down the Netflix, we'll put that on. I feel there'll have been an audience for this that was maybe wanting an alien invasion film or something like that. Yeah. I think this will have probably hit an audience, or an audience will have gone to this that, on reflection, wouldn't have touched it if they knew what it was, kind of the design of it. So it would have been interesting if this came out like just to cinema and then a home release. It didn't go through Netflix.
Yeah.
It might have balanced out a little bit more. It might have been a bit lower critically, but the audience would have been a bit more selective. Who knows?
I think, like you say, your target audience, I think when you watch a film on Netflix, you want an ending to it.
And the
fact that this one just ends. I always think back to a quote what I once read years ago about Clint Eastwood. He once said that always leave the audience wanting more. And I think that's
like us here on Watch Some Podcast.
So Scott. But seriously, when you look at it, that's a good thing.
Just
a
press
good,
the music. Yeah.
But no, for me, right, when you look at a good film, you don't need a trilogy, do you? You don't need another film, another film. There is a market out there. There is your franchises. There is,
and there's good examples.
There's good examples where that you do need
six film
that.
Sagas or whatever.
A Marvel or a DC or a Transformers or something like that. You know, there is these sort of franchises out there where it does work. But I get what Clint Eastwood's saying there. I get that. You leave people wanting a bit more. What I like about this is, This is what I liked about The Road, about the book of that, and a little bit about The Road as well, in a similar sense to this, that there's so much more more stories to tell of this that you kind of don't need any more of it. A bit like The Walking Dead. We're getting that ending now, aren't we? We're going to find out them, the ending of these other characters, but really that's where a TV show goes wrong, because they just keep making it again and again. And you sometimes think to yourself, just go out on a high, just end it. And leave people wanting what happened here, what happened there.
We referenced this on the preview 2024 preview show about A Quiet Place, having A Quiet Place Day One coming out.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
I'm looking forward to that because I really enjoy that world. Double side of that coin though, because I feel on one hand, it's good that they're not just doing a third one.
Yeah.
For that, what you just said, because they're very good at that. Those films, the way they end.
Yeah.
You know, they certainly the first and the second one, really. To be fair, the ending of them is quite. Yes, there's a resolution to what's gone on in that film, but they're almost about to step off into something
it's
else.
Like a chapter.
And then it ends, yeah. Doesn't it? So it's good that they're not just coining them like one after the other after the other.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it will be interesting. A prequel is always dangerous because it becomes like convenient and, you know, so it'll be interesting to see how they do it. But that's a good example of a franchise that's working that leaves you wanting more.
When you get something like that, I always think of things like, I'll tell you a franchise that I mean, this is going into something else now, but I'll tell you a franchise that I really don't like is the John Wick films. I know Ben will hate me for this because Ben loves them.
That could be a let's talk in itself.
Should we save this?
I think we should save that because I've got to watch the fourth one.
Well, I've not seen the third one.
I've
seen a bit of it.
Yeah,
so...
you could get them watched. I could get them watched. We could bring Ben in for a let's talk.
Watch them then. Just said to you, franchise I don't like.
Yeah, but anyways, we could give it a go. And that could be a let's
but
talk.
But we'll put a pin in that
put
one.
Put a pin in that one.
And we'll come back to that one then, yeah. But
breaking news, Stephen hates John Wick.
Oh no, here we go. Yeah. I'll watch the third and fourth.
Yeah,
and
you'll
be like John Wick, what?
You'll
a film.
Come with like long
what
hair and a tuxedo in like a black suit. Stephen really enjoyed these then. Yeah.
Maybe I'm thinking about coming back. Yeah. But yeah.
Cool.
Good chat.
Good little discussion.
About it.
And it enlightened me a little bit into your justification, and not that you have to justify it, but your reasons behind why that was rated so highly for you. So that was very good. If people want to go and hear our opinions on everything else, Stephen, where can they find our stuff?
On all major podcast providers.
They can. And you can find us on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter.
X.
By searching for Watch the Film Pod, or you can go to watchthefilmpod.com. Join us for more Let's Talk and some future episodes on the podcast.
Thanks a lot. Take care. Bye. We'll